Welcome back. Apologies. August got in our way, and we missed a couple of weeks. I hope everybody's had a healthy and enjoyable summer, wherever you are. We're continuing here on the bottom of Masechet Ta'anit, Daf Tet Zayin Omud Bet, the very, very, very bottom. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Lo Hayat Sarich Lomar Zichronot V'chule. On the Ta'aniyot, they would expand the Amidah, as we discussed in some length beforehand, and they would recite the Malchiyot, the Zichronot, and the Shofrot, just like we do on Rosh Hashanah. You know, we're coming up on Rosh Hashanah, but Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Rabbi Yehuda holds that they didn't say the psukim of Malchiyot, Zichronot, and Shofrot on these fast days for famine or for drought or for other things, and instead, what would they do? So the Gemara says, "Omar Rabbi Ada min Yafo," an Amora who's not—I don't think he's so well known. Rabbi Ada de min Yafo, my taima de Rabbi Yehuda. Why did Rabbi Yehuda say you don't say the Malchiyot, Zichronot, and Shofrot, like on Rosh Hashanah, but instead they crafted a different set of psukim
Sure, the last line.
that would have been more appropriate for these fast days? Why, what's the reason? Lefi she'ein omrin Zichronot v'Shofarot. Turn the page, top of Daf Yud Zayin Omer Aleph. His position was that Rabbi Yehuda held that those brachot were not appropriate for the regular fast day, but they were only recited on Rosh Hashanah. The Malchiyot, today, Bizman Hazeh, the only time we recite those three brachot, of course, is in the Musaf of both days of Rosh Hashanah. But in the times of the Gemara, they would say it on Rosh Hashanah, and also on the Yom Kippur of Yovel. Yovel, once every 50 years, seven times seven Shmitot. Yovel was a special occasion. In addition to being another year of all the Shmita observances agriculturally, it also involved a whole variety of things, including Shichrur Avadim, the release of slaves, and the return of property to original landowners. And that was accomplished on the Yom Kippur, the Yom Kippur following the Yovel, and on that occasion they also recited the Malchiyot, Zichronot, and Shofrot, and also in times of Milchama, they would also recite the Malchiyot, Zichronot, and Shofar. Rashi says, "Ubishat milchama, dichtiv v'chi tavo milchama ba'artzechem al hatzar hatzorer etchem v'chulei," that you should cry out to Hashem, and the special crying out to Hashem at the time of war would have been done through the Malchiyot, Zichronot, v'Shofar. V'le'adan in mana it parish to Omer brachot psukei Malchiyot, Zichronot, v'Shofar b'shat milchama. But Rashi says that this was quite unfamiliar to him, what the Gemara here says. The Mishnah goes on. The Mishnah at the beginning of the Perek says, "Al harishonah hu omer mi sha'ana et Avraham v'chule." When they would recite the first of the special brachot in the expanded Amidah on fast days, they would say, "Mi sha'ana et Avraham." You know that we have on our, as part of the slichot and part of the special tefillot on Yamim Neraim, we have these Mi sha'ana l'Avraham, l'Yitzchak, l'Yaakov, a whole list of these figures that were answered in their prayers. Tana, the Brisa says, "Yesh machlifin sa'aka le'Eliyahu u'tfila." Lishmuel. I'm sorry, I should have grabbed a machzor before we began, so I had it in front of me. The question is, all of these synonyms for prayer, and it's almost a kind of like, you remember when we were kids and the teacher would hand out like you get a quiz like that where you'd have to like connect the right, and you have like a list of all the state capitals and all of the names of the states, and you have to draw a line connecting Albany to New York and Tallahassee to Florida. So in other words, you can list the names of Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, David, Shlomo, Yosef, Eliyahu, Yonah, etc. And the synonyms for how their prayer is answered, what their prayer is, if it's tefillah, if it's tzedakah. So the Gemara says that some would connect the word tzedakah to cry out in prayer with Eliyahu, because after all, Eliyahu, Bahar Carmel, and the word tefillah with Shlomo. So the Gemara says, Bishlam agabe Shmuel. That makes sense for Shmuel. Tiv beit tefillah. There's a pasuk in Shmuel that says that Shmuel gathered up all the Bnei Yisrael in Mitzpah, and he was mitpalel. He had tefillah. And Shmuel also, there's a pasuk that says he was tzoik. Right? But what about Elagabe Eliyahu? Tefilaktiv, saka loktiv. But regarding Eliyahu, David, what did you just post here?
Yeah, Misha Anna.
Oh, from, I never think of doing these things. Oh, I see. I'm opening this up. Okay. Oh, here it's all the slichot. Okay. Anyway, you posted. You can see it. But by Eliyahu, it talks about tefillah, but it does not talk about tzedakah. Aneni Hashem aneni. Lashon Sa'akahi. So even though the word Sa'akah does not appear by Eliyahu, we do have Eliyahu crying out in Sefer Malachim, Aneni Hashem, Aneni. And what is it for somebody to stand up and throw their arms up to heaven and call out, Aneni, answer me, if not at Sa'akah? So even though the word isn't used, we clearly identify this action of Eliyahu, Bahar Carmel, as a form of tzaaka. So the Gemara says, even though there's no pasuk that says ve'eliyahu tzaak, you don't need that, because it's, you know, what's the first rule of what's the first rule of novel writing of you know, show don't tell, right? So the Navi shows us Eliyahu tzaak. It doesn't have to tell us that he was tzaak. So it all works out. Okay. The Gemara goes on. Al hashishit hu omer, and on the sixth bracha, we saw this all in the Mishnah. We went through this in greater detail when we learned the Mishnah. Al hashishit hu omer misha ana et Yonah v'chule. Al hashviit hu omer misha ana et David v'chule. Nechdi Yonah batar David u'shlomo hava. The Gemara asks a question about the chronological order of the listing of the names. First, it mentions Yonah b'mei hadaga, Yonah in the belly of the fish, and then it mentions David and Shlomo, but that's not in chronological order.
Neither was Eliyahu.
Either way, well, the Gemara is about to ask this. My time, makdim le bereisha. Why is Yonah put ahead? Mishum de boy. Lemechatam, Mirachem al Haaretz. It's not that Yonah comes first, it's that David and Shlomo are pushed down towards the end, because the bracha wants the bracha, not the way we say it on Yamim Noroyim, but the bracha of the fast day ends with a discussion about Hashem having compassion, having mercy on the land. Because after all, you remember, it's a fast day, because we have a drought and things are in trouble and we need rain. Right, so we want to put the focus back on the land, and therefore the piyut or the bracha wants to move David and Shlomo towards the end, which therefore naturally pushes Yonah and Eliyahu and others up towards the top, because we want to end Merachem al Haaretz. Tana mishum sumchus amru baruch mashpil haramim. And the Braisa says that Sumchus was an interesting character. We won't talk about him right now. But he says the bracha ends, Baruch Mashpil Haramim, who brings down low, who humbles those who are on high. And that's a description of David and Shlomo, who were Be'igra Rama. They were at the height of the highs. They were king of Israel, and they are humbled through things that do. Shalosh ta'aniot rishonot, anshei mishmar mitanim velo mashlimin. The Mishnah said that on the first round of fasts, okay, you see where we are? Shalosh taniot rishonot, on the first round of three fasts, anshei mishmar mitanin velo mashlimin. The kohanim that are on duty would fast, but they wouldn't complete their fast. They would not fast for the whole day. Tanu rabbanan, mipnei ma amru anshei mishmar mutarin lishtot yayin balelot. Why were the Kohanim that were on duty allowed to drink wine at night? Avalo biyamim. They were allowed to drink at night, but not during the day. Now, you remember, Yehudi, we had a debate on this. Not a debate. I said one thing, and then you corrected me, and I tipped my hat to correct you. But it turns out, in fact, we were both right. The Kohanim that are on duty, that are the Anshei Mishmar, can drink at night, but not during the day. And why? Shema tichbad avoda al Anshei Beit Av, v'yavo v'yisayu lehem. Because maybe, even though they're on, you know how, now again, remember how it was. When it was your turn, the Kohanim were divided up into different mishmarot. And once a year, they were called up to Yerushalayim to go and serve in the Mikdash. But even then, there were too many Kohanim. When you went to serve in Beit HaMikdash, you weren't on duty all week long. You were kind of, what do they call that? Like when the doctors are on call?
On call.
On call, Bekonanut. And your Beit Av, your subdivision of the Mishmar, would work on Tuesday. So why were you allowed to, drink liquor, wine at night, but not during the day? So why shouldn't you be able to drink during the day if it's not your day? Because it could be, even though it's not your day, it could be that you'll get called in, right? You're on call. When you're on call, you're not working. But at a minute of a drop set, it could be that there's extra stuff to do. Maybe somebody called in sick, right? Maybe they needed an extra hand, and you would be called in on your day that week, even though it wasn't your particular day. So therefore, you weren't allowed to touch liquor the whole day, lest you get the call and you have to come. Yavo v'sayelhem. You'll come and you will have to help out, pitch in on another day. Mipnei ma amru anshei beit av lo biyom velo balayla. But on the day, taka, that you were working, you couldn't drink neither during the day, because no kohen that week of the mishmar could drink, but you also couldn't drink at night. Now, Yehudi explained the Gemara to mean you couldn't drink at night following the day that you were doing your avodah, because in fact, as most mefarshim explain, even at night following the day of your work, there were certain labors to be performed in Beit HaMikdash, including making sure that all of the stuff was burnt up, the evarim ufedarim were nitaklu al gabei hamizbeach, and there were other types of duties that you had to do in order to close up. I was actually I was driving someplace with my young daughter late at night. And, oh no, we were going to get something to eat. and we were going to the falafel place here. Here in Efrat, things close up early. So we got to the falafel place and it was closed. But yet the lights were still on and people were still inside. And she couldn't understand, what are they doing there if they're closed? So she thought, like, if the restaurant closes, if the falafel closes at 8 o'clock, that means at 8 o'clock they turn off the lights, they lock the door, and they leave. And I had to explain to her that no, at 8 o'clock they stop serving the food. But the people that work there probably have to stay maybe for another half hour, another hour, maybe more, because they have to clean up, they have to get ready for the next day, they have to take out the trash, they have to do all these types of things. So even after they're closed for business, there's usually work to be done. And that is the work of the Kohanim at night. And therefore they can't drink at night because technically they're still on duty. And that is why, Yehudi, the Kohanim, whose day of Avodah it is, cannot drink at night. Does that represent the position that you took?
Well, I got it from Rashi and Bar.
Oh, yafe. So it turns out there's another position. The Rambam. I was relying on the Rambam. So I'm in good company. Even though it's true, Yehudi, the majority of the Mefarshim explain like Rashi the way that you did. But the Rambam says, Anshei Mishmar, here this is the Rambam in Hilchot Biyat HaMikdash, the first parak. Anshei Mishmar mutarin l'shtok yayin b'leilot, avalo b'mei Shabbatan. Not on the day of the week that's their day of working. Vafilu shar batei avot shel mishmar she'en avodatan hayom, shema tichbad ha'avodah l'anshei beit av shel yom v'yitzarchu l'acherim anshei. And people who are not on duty that day but are on call cannot drink during the day because maybe they'll be pulled in to lend an extra hand. The people who are on duty that particular day shall oto hayom asurin lishtot bein bayom bein balayla. They can't drink neither at day nor at, I'll fill in the blank here, the night before, Shema Yishte Balaila Vyashkim La Avodotova Adayan Lo Sar Yeno Me'alav. And they can't drink. The Rambam understands the Gemara to be saying they can't drink the day that they're on the job, and they can't drink the night before, lest they wake up to go off to Avodat Beit HaMikdash still hungover. According to Rashi and Rebbe Yehudi, the Gemara has to be understood as they can't drink during the day that they're on duty. Everybody agrees to that. And they can't drink the night following their work because they might still have, because there's work that goes on until the night. So you see the machloket. In fact, the Gemara says biyom uvalaila, which might seem sequential. You can't drink a day and you can't drink the following night. The Rambam reads it as bayom. The ikar isur is you can't drink during the day. As a matter of fact, no kohen of the mishmar of that week can drink during the day. And also, in addition, the kohen of the Beit Av, the kohanim of the Beit Av who are on duty that day cannot drink the night before. The Ravid, Yehudi, you'll be glad to know, the Ravid reads it like you. Against me and the Rambam, the Ravid says, this is not the reason. No. It's because of the work at night. But the question is, even according to most Meforshim and to Yehudi Feldman and to the Ravid, why can't you drink at night? You get up in the morning. Obviously, you're not drinking in the morning. Obviously, you're not drinking the whole day you're on duty. No Kohen, either on duty or merely on call, can drink during the day. But it comes nighttime. Shkia arrives. They blow the whistle. Everybody, Fred Flintstone slides off the dinosaur. Everybody goes home. But the Kohanim that were on duty, like the waiters and waitresses in the restaurant after the restaurant closes, they have to stick around to finish up the work. But even they, at a certain point, finish up and go home. They don't do a 24-hour shift. Why can't they drink after everything is done and cleaned up and the ketoret is done and everything else? How do you answer that?
The reason I sent you that email was because after you got done, I just happened to look at Rashi, and it became apparent to me that Rashi didn't agree. But what you're saying makes perfect sense.
I'm not criticizing you. I'm complimenting you.
I'm not criticizing you. What you're saying makes perfect sense.
It's not me.
You don't want someone to go to work with a hangover.
Yeah, so that's the Rambam. That's the
same. But you said that before, and I'm not disagreeing with it. It does make sense.
And Achinami, I'm just pointing out that the Rambam, there's a machlokas here between Rashi and the Rambam, between Rashi and the Ravid and other Mefarshim and the Rambam, and it happens to correlate exactly with the opinions that both you and I presented. But I'm trying to argue that the Rambam's position is actually a little bit more logical. Because why should it be usher for the Kohanim after they did their duty during the day into the night, when they do finally clock out and go home, why can't they put their feet up with a nice glass of wine at that point?
Perhaps this has something to do with the kochim that the Kohanim got that day, and they eating them at night. I don't know, is there any...
There's no issur of eating kochim with wine.
You can eat kachum while you're drunk. I don't know what the...
What did they do at the Leila Seder? They eat kachum and they wash it down with 4 kosot yayin.
Yeah, that grape juice, I guess.
Oh, come on. You're kidding me now.
So, okay.
Grape juice is a heter. It's not what's desirable.
I think Shalom was joking.
Okay, I figured.
Okay. Where are we? Mikan Amru. Oh, but now we have a different question. You're not allowed to drink. No Kohen. You go with the Anshei Mishmar to Yerushalayim this week. You're really only going to be working Minastam, unless something goes wrong and you have to be pulled in as a substitute. You're only going to be working one day of the seven, and the rest of the time, it's like a yontif for you, the Kohanim. It's like these guys talk about going off to, Steve's not with us, but, like the guys talk about going off to Milawim, depending on what you do in Milawim and what's going on in the country and whether we're at a state of war or it's just kind of normal times. You know, so Milawim is, you hang out, you play sheshbesh, you drink a little, you have ala'esh, So that's why Steve kept doing Milawim until they kicked him out. He enjoyed all those things. So the Kohanim that are in Yerushalayim the week of their, let's say your Beit Av works on Yom Rishon. So you really have the rest of the week off until Shabbat. On Shabbat, everybody pitched in and worked together. So you have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. They would sit, they would learn, they would hang out in Yerushalayim. If you came from far away, you came from up in the Galil, you'd go shopping, you'd go, I don't know, whatever people do in Yerushalayim. You'd have the opportunity to witness what's going on in Beit HaMikdash. But you couldn't drink wine the whole week during the day, and you couldn't drink wine at night, either the night before like the Rambam or the night following like Rashi on the day of your actual duty. So Mikan Amru, the Gemara says, Mikan Amru, Kol Kohen, Shemakir Mishmarto, Umishmeret Beit Av Shelo, Viodeya Shabate Avotav Kfuin Sham Asur Lishtot Yayin Kol Oto Hayom. Any Kohanim with us? No? Well, David
used not in present time.
David used to be a Kohen. And David's example is a perfect case to show that this halakha has really gone away from the world. But we all know if we're a Kohen, a Levi, or Yisrael, except for the fact that Mipnei chata'enu galinu meratzenu v'nitrachapnu me'al avodoteinu, and we don't know so much anymore what's what, and even knowing whether you're a Kohen, a Levi, or Yisrael is a little confusing. And I often point out, and those of you from Efrat know all the parties involved, in our community alone, we have one guy who used to be a Yisrael, and through genealogical evidence discovered, in fact, he's a Kohen, he got an upgrade. We have a Kohen who discovered he's really a Levi and got the downgrade. That's the David here. And there's a Levi, myself, who discovered he's Stama, Yehudi Pashut, and now is just a simple Yisrael. I got the short end of the stick.
I think it's an upgrade to go from Kohen to Levi. You get, you know, Master instead of Shuma. It's a better deal.
Maybe, but you don't get Kochim.
That's true.
Right. Maybe
it's more of a vegetarian's diet.
What they do say that Kohanim and Levi'im obviously get more aliyahs than Yisraeli.
That's for
when
sure.
I was a Levi, I used to get a Kohen, I used to get an aliyah all the time.
Right.
But so right in our own shul, we have this musical chairs of three people discovering that they're not what they thought. So the Gemara imagines a time where not only did people know that they were Kohanim, but they knew which Mishmeret they were connected to, and they knew which Beit Av they were connected to, and they knew which week they would have been in Beit HaMikdash. Presumably, we're talking about the period, the generation after the Churban. I don't think anybody today could make any kind of claim to know these things.
So it might have gone on for longer than that, Rabbi Sachs.
Maybe
for example, the Mishnah starts off with Mishasha HaKohen Nichnasim Lechol B'Trumatan. Now tell me, the Mishnah was published in the year 219. At some point, that had to be recognizable still then. Otherwise, what would be the point of saying that? In other words, I think that went on for centuries.
Well, no,
Yossi Ben Yossi, he knows what Mishmeret he belongs to. The Kohen who roasted the Piyutim for the Avodah, for Yom HaKippurim, he's from the, I think, 4th or the 5th century CE. He talks like he knows exactly what Mishmeret and Beit Avi belong to. I don't think it was just one generation. I think they kept that Masara with the thought of the fact that if they Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt, you know, they'll be able to go back. Remember, in the time of Julian the Apostate, they were talking about rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash. That was the 4th century CE. Remember that inscription they discovered? Retem v'sas libchem v'atzmotechem kadesha tifrachna, that they then assigned to the period of 353 to 355, I think that's the time of Julian, that somebody wrote because they thought the Beit HaMikdash, he gave permission to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. Then he died, but most people think they poisoned him. But either way, people knew already.
There's an interesting article in recent tradition on this.
Well, you're the editor. Why don't you post it so send it by email?
Looking for it right now.
Very good.
The use of Bizman Shekoanim Ayu, Bishasha Shekoanim Ayu Nichlasim Lechom Mitrumatam is, there's two, that's not in any way an indication that people knew their Beit Av.
Just that the traditions associated with the Beit HaMikdash seem to have gone on for a long time after the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. People didn't give up on it for a few centuries until afterwards.
Maybe. I'm not sure that the piyut of Yossi, Rabbi Yossi, is not literary imagination or not. But the very first question, in other words, the Mishnah itself is fully aware that it's describing a reality which is not, which, by the way, 1,000 years later, the Rambam himself does in the Mishnah Torah. Right? It's a bigger question than the Rambam, that they describe a halachic reality that's has not been practiced for whatever it is, 150 years or 1,000 years or 1,150 years, because that's the rabbinic imagination that we discuss the halakha as if it's still in practice, right? In other words, only rarely does the Rambam kind of step out from behind the curtain to say, by the way, this isn't the normative practice. You would read the Rambam, you would think we were still doing karbonos.
But sometimes the Rambam might just be bringing down a language that someone wrote before him, or the Mishnah's language.
Yeah, but in other words, it's a very curious, you know, the Rambam, we can imagine a parallel universe in which the Rambam sets out to write his Mishnah Torah, where, like the Shulchan Aruch, 300 years later, 350 years later, he only presents the halakha l'maaseh of his time, and not a kind of encyclopedic work which imagines that all of the halachot of the Mikdash and Yishuv Eretz Yisrael are still in effect. And the Mishnah does that as well. But the Gemara on the very first Amud of Brachos, on Brachos Daf Pero Ben Aleph, asks this question: why in the world is the, instead of saying that we recite Shema from Seit HaKochavim, which would have been a much more straightforward way to do it, why does the Mishnah give this kind of coded timestamp of B'shash Kohanim Nichnasim Lechol B'Trumatam, which is synonymous with Seit HaKochavim? So the Mishnah says, because it was interested in teaching a separate halakha, wanted to piggyback and do two things at once, but that's got nothing to do with Anshei Beitav and all this other stuff. It may have been isolated generation, it may have been multiple generations, but certainly not for the last 1,500 years. And
1,500 is fine.
Right? Right? But
okay, so gets you back to the 5th century BCE. Okay.
So anyway, I just posted a link in the chat to this article about these topics that Yehudi was talking about. So anyway, if you knew, Taka, if you were still part of this generation or two or three or five or however many that had this yichus, that had this knowledge of which family you were connected to and when, and not only that, but if you had the tradition of the calendar to know that today, Bizman Shabbat HaMikdash Haya Kayam, today on August 24th on Yom Shlishi, I would have been in Beit HaMikdash doing the Avodah. So then, in Enachinami, if you know this, Mikan Amru Kol Kohen Shemakir Mishmarto Mishmeret Beitav Shelo V'Yodeh Shabbatei Avotav Kvuin Sham Asur L'Shtot Yayin Kol Oto Hayom. You can't drink on that day. Why? Sheyiboneh Beit HaMikdash. The third bayit should fall from the sky. You're going to get the call. You're going to have to go and do the work. So you cannot drink on that day, right? Not as a zecher to what your great-great-great-great-great-grandfathers on your paternal line would have done or not drunk on that day, but because maybe still there's hope that today I'll get the call. B'makir mishmarto v'ein makir mishmeret beit av shelo, V'yodeya mishmarto mishmeret beit av shelo v'yodeya shabbatei avot kvuin sham asur l'shtot yayin kol oto shana. And if you don't know, right? If you don't know what, no, I'm sorry, wait, I skipped. If you know kol oto shabbat, hold on a second, what's the place? But if you know Kolot Shabbat, right? But if you know which Mishmeret you're part of, but you don't know which Beit Av you're part of, you know the first guy knows we're working this week of the year, and my crowd would be this particular day. You can't drink on that day. If you know your Mishmeret, you know which week you would work, but you wouldn't know which day of the week, so you can't drink that whole week, because every day is a suffix the day that you were on duty, and maybe Beit HaMikdash will will come, and therefore you can't drink that whole week, because on any given day you could be called by surprise to come and do the job. And if you don't know which mishmeret you're part of, and you don't know which Beit Av you're part of, that means any given day of the year is a suffolk your day, the day that you, Mr. Cohen, would have been on duty, and therefore you can't drink all year long. So the Gemara suggests the possibility that Kohanim Bizman Hazeh can never drink wine. Because at any given moment, Beit HaMikdash Yibaneh, and it could be that it's their day, and they'll get called, and they won't be able to do the Avodah because they had been tippling at the bottle.
There's one issue with that, though, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, they're tummy. So we have a little time to deal with that, no? Like, in the amount of time it would take, if the assumptions of the Kohanim were tameim, then it would take enough time to at least get them sober up.
Yeah, but Tuma Hutra Batsibur.
In the Mikdash?
Yeah. Also?
What?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Bracha, what'd you say?
I said, does this include liquor also? Liquor.
I think it includes all liquor. I mean, the Gemara talks about chamer, about wine, because that was the liquor of choice. Wine was a daily drink, right? And in the ancient world, people never drank water. Water was like drinking poison. But beer in some places and wine in other places were the daily drink. So it uses wine as the kind of expression for probably all intoxicating beverages. But yes, but this would apply. Kohanim on duty are not allowed to drink any intoxicating beverages.
Okay, thank you.
So the Gemara has this idea. Obviously, this is not the halakha l'maaseh, right? And not, I mean, nobody's even machmir like this.
Can I ask a question?
The havamina here is that Kohanim would never be able to drink wine. So Rabbi Omer Ani, Asur Lishtot. That's a little strange. Rabbi Omer Ani. I hadn't noticed that before. Rabbi says, quote, I say, Asur Lishtot Yayin Leolam. That Taka, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi says that Kohanim should never be allowed to drink wine at all. Meaning, even if he knows which mishmar he's part of. Why? Because Rashi explains, because any given moment Beit HaMikdash could come when we have to do the Chanukah Tabayit, it's going to be all hands on deck. Right? So Rabbi says all Kohanim can't drink, not because of the reason that it's a safek that maybe this is your day, which is a pretty big safek, right? In other words, it's a 1 in 365 chance. That's pretty low odds that it's your day. In other words, if we say that the drop of milk in the pot of chicken soup is butel b'shishim, this is any one person is butel 1 in 365, right? But nevertheless, the Gemara suggests as a havamina, as a hypothesis, that would be enough to forbid him from drinking anytime. But Rabbi Yehuda Anasi says, no, they can't drink, no Kohen can drink, not because there's a safek that today is their Beit Av. It's a real chumrah. And you should be able to get out of it by saying what? According to the halachot of Sfeikot, how could you get out of, how could you reject this havamina? If you have a safek that something is asur, what's one of the mechanisms by which we can get around that safek?
Chazakah.
Well, chazakah overrules a safek, so it's not a, but here, what's the chazakah? There's no chazakah.
I wrote it. It's not like if you don't know, it's not distinct. We're not like mixing everyone's distinct anyway, so it's not really tarobit.
No, the concept of a sfeik sfeika, a double doubt. I'm a Kohen. Maybe today is the day of my Beit Av, so I shouldn't. It's a suffix. I don't know which day is my Beit Av. But today is a 1 in 365 chance that it's today is the day of my Beit Av. So since there's a suffix, I shouldn't drink. But there's a different suffix. And I don't mean the suffix that maybe I'm not really a Kohen. There's a suffix that maybe Beit HaMikdash, was Beit HaMikdash built yesterday? Unfortunately not. Was it built
today? I'm not allowed to have that suffix.
Unfortunately not. There's a suffix whether Beit HaMikdash will be built today. So it's a sfeik. Maybe Beit HaMikdash will not be built today. And maybe in all cases, it's not my Beit Av day. But as Ben points out, you can't. It's also to have a suffix like that. It goes against the principle of faith. Ani ma'amin b'muna shlema. The halacha, as Ben properly points out, the halacha will not even entertain the possibility that there's a suffix that Beit HaMikdash might not be built today. Even though we've got a pretty long, unfortunately, a long track record of days since Tisha B'Av in the year 70 on which the Beit HaMikdash was not built. And from an outside objective perspective, right, there's no reason to think there's a better chance Beit HaMikdash will be rebuilt today any more than it was not rebuilt yesterday. But the halakha is not prepared to entertain that idea in order to construct a sfeik sfeika. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi disallows Kohanim. The Gemara, this whole idea about the sfeik Beit Av is a havamina. But Rabbi Yehuda Anasi says, la halacha, I don't think Kohanim should be able to drink ever. Not because of Beit Av, etc., but because maybe Beit HaMikdash will be built today, and on the day Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt, every Kohen is on duty because of the Chanukah Tabayit. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, Asur l'shtot yayin le'olam. Aval ma'ese, he says, what can I do? Shetakanato kilkalato. His error, his kilkul, his being broken down is to his advantage. Who's dinging?
Yes. Hello? Question?
Ben, did you want to say something?
Yeah. You raised a point about 5 minutes ago that actually had me a bit puzzled. You noted that water was poison throughout much of ancient and pre-modern history.
Yeah.
Much of the world today. And since there was no such thing as grape juice, because grape juice would spoil within a matter of hours after producing it. So what did people drink? Well, they couldn't drink wine. They couldn't drink chamar.
They drank beer.
But that's also...
People did drink water. It's not like nobody ever drank water, but through the Middle Ages, people drank a lot more fermented. But the point of fermented beverages was that the fermentation
destroyed the bacteria
that was prevalent in most of the fresh water sources. People did drink, but even in the Victorian era in England, there was that famous case, that famous doctor that figured out how...
The cholera problem, right.
Yeah, how typhoid...
That was his name.
Yeah, but it was typhoid, right?
Cholera.
Oh, it was cholera.
Cholera, right? How cholera was spread through by tracing that the well in this neighborhood, in this courtyard, or whatever it was infected, and he was the first epidemiologist that figured out how these things work. So even in the Victorian era, it was very dangerous. In the ancient world, people drank a lot more. Even in the medieval, certainly in antiquity, but even in the medieval world, people drank liquor and children drank liquor. Children drank beer. There's people. It's a reason that they weren't that they didn't have Intel and Google in the Middle Ages. They were drunk at the time.
It wasn't just Intel and Google. They say that when did the Enlightenment start? When they started having coffee and tea, because suddenly you could have a drink that wasn't getting you drunk. You'd be drunk all day. And they had coffee houses and tea houses. People could actually sit and have a normal, like an intelligent conversation and not be drunk all day.
Yeah. When I was in Budapest last, there's a very good book, an excellent book that I reviewed for Tradition here by my friend Shahar Pinsker. It's called A Rich Brew: How Cafes Created Modern Jewish Culture.
And really, Cafe and Agnon. That's you're the authority on that too, Rabbi Zach.
Well, actually, Agnon features in the book. But it's really not about coffee, but it's about the culture of coffee houses, right. but in certain periods and certain times in certain cities. In other words, he talks about what are the cities that he table of contents? Odessa, Warsaw, Vienna, Berlin, New York, and Tel Aviv Yafo, and how the coffee houses become the center for the intellectuals and for the radicals and for the revolutionaries and for the authors and the poets and the politicians and etc. And that's where the business of the intellectual ferment of each town and place gets done. And it's told particularly through the perspective of the Jewish life in all of these places. It's a very interesting book. But when I was in Budapest last, there's a very famous 19th century or early 20th century cafe, which looks opulent, and it looks, still, like it did once upon a time. And I went in to have a cup of coffee, and the person I was with was explaining the thing to me. And he said there was like these kind of like fancy, they look like writing desks, like tall, writing desks, with like little holes in them, remember like the desk. I mean, I remember when I was still in elementary school, they had some of the classrooms had like old wooden desks, and all of them had that little indent or hole where the ink pot would have sat once. The inkwell would have sat once upon a time. So in this
like cafe, an internet cafe today.
Well, exactly. So in this cafe, they would give out free paper and ink. Right, which is exact, because that would draw the authors and the intellectuals to come in, and they'd have to fuel their work with the coffee that was being sold. It is exactly the same as the equivalent of Starbucks giving away free internet today, free Wi-Fi, in order to get people to come in and drink coffee. So anyway, that was a side point about liquor and water and coffee and etc. Yes. Rabbi says, Rabbi Yudanas is Zerachinami. No Kohen should be ever allowed to drink today, but what can we do? The Kilkul is the Takana. Meaning that it's not, our Kilkul, the fact that the Beit HaMikdash has not been rebuilt. So it gets them off the hook. Like, we just have to manage. We can't say that Kohanim are forbidden to drink liquor for 2,000 years. So it has to be that we let them. So Omar Abaye, Keman Shatu Haidna, Kane Chamra. So whose opinion allows contemporary Kohanim to drink liquor? So that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who actually thinks mi'ikar hadin, they shouldn't be allowed to drink, but it's like a gzeirah sherov atzibur eino yochol lamod. Right? If the churban was a decade, 2 decades, 70 years, but it's been going on for so long, we can't sustain it. It's not possible. So we allow the kohanim to drink according to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who mi'ikar hadin would prefer that they don't drink. Now, I've never heard of any kohen who says, I've never heard of anybody say, if you can, you should be machmir and not ever drink. But it's an interesting
question. And even a yach is not allowed to be machmir atzmo in that kind of situation.
So it kind of shows, it's like a perfect example of how we preserve a halakha. In principle, even though it's not operative, meaning the value has not been abrogated. Last week I spoke about Ben Soer Omore, which the Gemara itself, you know, kind of, the Gemara is prepared to acknowledge that there's no such thing in reality, right? Just in theory. And even if it's possible that there is such a thing as Ben Soer Omore, this rebellious son who has to be put to death for the crimes and the sins he will commit in the future. So even if the Gemara is prepared to say that there is such a thing, or that there were historical cases as minor as they were, or as rare as they were, nevertheless, the Gemara gives so many mitigating requirements in order for someone to be a Ben Soer Omore, that in reality, it's almost impossible to ever execute someone based upon that halacha. But the Torah Shebaal Peh doesn't say we get rid of Ben Soer Omore, right? Ben Soer Omore still exists conceptually. This very troubling halacha exists conceptually, even if it's never carried out. Right? We don't abolish it. We just find a workaround that preserves the value without having to carry it out in practice, because that is so disturbing. Okay, the Gemara
is just a quick question, mm-hmm. though. Is the whole idea of Beit Av and all that in the Mishmarot, is that Doraita, or was that something that they needed a technical way to set up the Kohanim?
It's not even Doraita.
No, so then wouldn't another possibility just be that, like, okay, we don't know. It's not like we have an issue of Doraita Kohanim, we have to know what to do. Here it's okay. So, you know what, we had a setup. We'll divide up the Kohanim again by, you know, which one's Katz and which one's Kaplan. I mean, it's a different way of doing it.
Right? So, first of all, the Batei Av, there was this idea that Batei Av were also geographical. In other words, when your town sent its Kohanim off to
the... weren't required to stay there. They could move, right?
Yeah. But presumably Beit HaMikdash Yibaneh. So just like Eliyahu HaNavi will come and tell everybody what Shevet they're connected to. So either they'll tell us which Beit Av is, or we'll reconstitute the Batei Av, you know, at some point going forward. But it's not a Dioraita necessarily, which Mishmeret you're part of. And presumably there, you know, you can imagine a case where there would be a Beit Av that was coming from the Galil. I don't think we know what the schedule was, which week.
Basak is going to discuss that too. And
we don't know the schedule. We don't know.
I understand. But the idea, when he asked before about whether it comes from the Torah, it's not listed in the Torah, but it is listed in Dirahamim.
It's a Bayit Sheni thing. It's a Bayit Sheni thing. So then, if it wasn't Bayit Rishon and Bayit Sheni, we can do Bayit Shlishi.
Well, but Dirahamim, trying to make it sound like David set this up. Now, I grant you, a historian today would probably say that that's an anachronistic statement on the part of Dirahamim. But just from a Talmud point of view, though, the Talmud doesn't consider Dirahamim anachronistic.
No, but it's not Dioraita.
I don't know. If it's in the Tanakh listed, then it's sort of hard to make it out. But Shira Talavim is
halakha, it might be Midivrei Nevi'im, but it's not. But it's not Min HaTorah.
Is Shira Talavim Min HaTorah?
Is what?
Shir Hashir Talavim Ayomrim Beit HaMikdash. Would you say that's Min HaTorah?
No.
But a lot of Mefarshim say that. Even the Midrash says that. Sifrei says that. You know? In other words, yeah, you're right. If you read Tanakh the way it's constructed, then this is something that David and Solomon thought up, and in a time of Moshe Rabbeinu, nobody ever did it.
There was no Mikdash in the Torah.
But the Levim are required to do Shira.
And it seems that Aaron and his sons were able to handle all the work very well.
Right, but the idea that Shira is a responsibility of a VM as part of the Avodat HaKodesh already in the time of the Mishkan.
But the idea that the specific Mizmor Liyom Aleph and Yom Bet.
No, I wasn't talking about that. I was talking about Shira.
The VM would sing Shira, yes, But the specific Mizmorim, no. And the idea of the Bate Avda, how could you have the Bate Avda? Those families weren't yet established.
Well, who would you know Torah Levi?
But those priestly families did not exist in the time of the Torah. They existed later in times of Nevi'im, in times of Bayit Rishon, Bayit Sheni. So it's obviously not Min HaTorah. It's not Deoraita. Right?
Okay.
So it can be reconstituted in theory in a different way if Eliyahu HaNavi is not interested in like reviving these ancient genealogical lines. But you could also imagine in the times of the Mikdash, there was a Beit Av that was coming from the Galil, and it was very far away, and they would set out however many days in advance in order to get to Yerushalayim in time. Presumably they would get there before the preceding Shabbat, because you couldn't show up, you know, on Sunday morning. And I don't know, there was a storm and the roads got washed out. Right? You're coming from the Galil, you could have been snowed out. And it could have happened. You didn't get to Yerushalayim on time. So Sunday morning, they open the Sharei Mikdash, and they say, okay, Beit Av Ploni, let's get to work. And they're not there. Right? There were enough Kohanim that were Tahorim, that were Muchanim, that were at the ready, right? That could step in for that Beit Av. So the idea of a Beit Av is certainly not Ma'akev the Avodah, right? If one Beit Av showed up, well, let's say the Beit Av, let's imagine the Beit Av is on its way to Yerushalayim, and the day before they get there, Rachmana Litzlan, one of the members, drops dead. And they all become Tameh. They were all hanging out in the same tent. Now they're all Tameh Meis. They can't do the Avodah that day. They can't do the Avodah that week. Right? So obviously, you know, the presence of the Beit Av, who was on schedule, was not Ma'akev, the Avodah. Someone else could have done it. Okay, we'll continue here next week, and hopefully we'll be back on schedule, except for upcoming Yamim Noraim and Chagim and etc.
Yishar kochacha.
Bye.
Let me just get this off, and I'll do yours too.